So we're continuing to look at a number of parables related to the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. And we reached this one this week. Jesus, was about a third of his teaching was in parables. But this is a week leading up to his death. He's heading to Jerusalem. He's in Jerusalem. Passover is coming. He doesn't have long to live. He's teaching in the temple. And someone asked him a question. As they were always asking him questions, sometimes to find reasons for things, but sometimes just to try and trip him up. And the question was, where does your authority come from? Who gave you this authority? Remember last week we were thinking about Jesus' teaching and heart said the people were overwhelmed by his teaching because he didn't speak just as any ordinary teacher. There was something authoritative about him. He spoke like he knew what he was talking about. It's not just like he prepared a sermon, but it was him, the kingdom, and about wanting these people to enter this kingdom. So the authority is questioned, and he tells three parables, one about the tenants, one about two sons, and this one, the wedding banquet. Now, everybody loves a wedding, don't they? It's a chance to get dressed up, maybe buy a new outfit. At least your wife buys a new outfit, spends all your money. Hopefully the sun will shine. Wow, it's going to be a fantastic day. But if you're actually organizing the wedding, that's not so easy. And even trying to decide who to invite to a wedding can be problematic. You know, do we have to invite great aunt so-and-so who we haven't seen in years and nobody really likes her? Do we have to invite her? Well, yes, we do, because she's family. What about all these other friends of mine? Well, we can't invite everybody because numbers are limited. So we're going to invite some people. So weddings can be problematic. They can cause all sorts of trouble. Who are you going to invite? This is talking about a wedding banquet, but not just any wedding. It's a royal wedding. I photocopied this from an invitation that I received a few years ago. I don't know why you laugh. But so remember this royal wedding? The last major royal wedding? Wow, it was going to be fantastic. Westminster Abbey, 3,000 people, the lucky 3,000, who would be invited? That would have been a problem, wouldn't it? Who do you invite? But can you imagine receiving an invitation to that wedding? Her Majesty requests the pleasure of Doug. Yes? Her Majesty requests the pleasure of Bobby. Can you imagine getting that invitation? Wouldn't you be so excited? Me? Why me? Why am I chosen? Why me? And who would refuse a wedding like that? I mean, the whole world was going to stop. Up north, you had a day off. People were glued to their TV sets. But to be invited to the wedding, who would say no? And even if you had your diary booked up, wouldn't you kind of reschedule things just to make sure that you could be there? Who would say no to this invitation? And yet in this parable, the king sends out his servants to invite the people who had already been invited. This was the second invitation to come. And isn't that what we do these days as well? These people were invited. The servants go out to say, the banquet is ready, come. And we kind of do that in our own day and age as well, because I'm doing this wedding tomorrow. But I was asked about it months ago. And you kind of get one of those little keep the date kind of things now, don't you? You put it in your fridge, keep the date. And then at some stage, you will get the official invitation. Come to the wedding. We'd love to see you there. And we reply, yeah, I'd love to come. And you come. But these servants went out to invite the people to the wedding banquet. But what was their response? Yeah, whatever. So what is the king going to do? The people invited aren't really interested in coming. So what's he going to do? Does he get angry? No. He sends out his servants again, because this is about a king, about a God who has amazing grace. And he reaches out, he goes the extra mile, and he reaches out and sends another invitation. What happens this time? Then he sent some of our servants and said, tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle have been slaughtered and everything is ready. Come, come to the wedding banquet. He sends the servants out with a menu. And if the invitation itself doesn't work, he tells them what they're going to get to eat. Now, when we go on holiday, or even here in Greystones, we look at the restaurants, because there's so many lovely restaurants, and you think you've got to try them. But what's the first thing you would do? You would look at the menu outside to see if there's anything you'd really eat. Is it my kind of place? So it's a bit fancy. It's a bit expensive. I'm not going in there. But you check out the menu to see if it's going to be okay. For our daughter, Deborah, she only eats chicken. So if there's no chicken on the menu, we don't go. But that's what this man did. He sent out the guys with the menu and he said, look, this is what we're having to eat and it's all ready and it's prepared for you. Will you come? There are a bunch who are just apathetic, disinterested, don't really want to go. One of the old commentators, Matthew Henry, talks about people who are careless with their souls. He said there are people who will not come to this banquet. There will be people who will not be with God eternally, not because they're hostile to Jesus, not because they hate Jesus, not because they find the message offensive, but just because they're careless. And they let the invitation slip by. It's lost. It's forgotten. Never responded to. Careless with their souls. It's a very dangerous thing, isn't it? Or easily we can go through life and we can hear things from the Bible, or we can talk to people who are Christians, or we can get all sorts of invitations in a spiritual sense, but we just let it go. Put it off. Apathy. But there was another group of people who weren't just apathetic, they were hostile. And they took the servants. They tortured them. And they murdered them. In our world, as we preach the gospel, as we tell people we're Christians, as we invite them to a churchy thing, should we be surprised that people are disinterested or apathetic? Not really, no. Should we be surprised when people are hostile? Many parts of the world, people simply for their faith are dying, beheaded, tortured, can't get a job, homes destroyed, churches burnt. Should we be surprised that there is hostility? Well, no, we shouldn't, because it's always been like that. But what does the king do? The king who is full of grace is also full of justice. He sends his army to destroy those people and their city. His justice is perfect. But as Jesus is telling this story about this banquet, and about a king, the host, and about a son who will get married, and the people who will be invited, they knew exactly what Jesus was talking about. It's a bit like if I said, we are like sheep, and Jesus is our shepherd, and you were thinking about scripture. You might think of Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. But these Pharisees knew the scriptures. And they probably almost exactly thought of Isaiah 25, written 700 years before Jesus was born. But this is what it says. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples. A banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. So here was a prophecy of what it would be like. God was preparing a banquet for those who loved him. And it was open to everybody. And it was an amazing prophecy. The Pharisees could hear what Jesus was saying. God, the king, is the host. His son is the Messiah who Jesus was claiming to be. And the people invited were themselves. And they were the ones saying, I'm not coming. And they were outraged. But what was the king going to do? Was he going to cancel? Do you know why you try to organize a party sometimes and you invite people? And one by one they phone you up and they say, I'm sorry, I'd love to come, but I just can't make it. And they cry off, and they cry off, and they cry off. And you think, is there any point in having this party at all? Because nobody wants to come. That's sad, isn't it? But for this king, he was going to, there's no way he was going to cancel that party. He sends his servants out again, and he says, I want you to go out the streets, the highways, the byways, and invite everybody that you see. The rich and the poor, the good and the bad. Invite them to come. Tell them there's a banquet prepared. It's here. Come and enjoy it. To the Pharisees, this was an outrage. To the good and the bad. Everybody knew that they were the chosen people. They would be with God for eternity. They would be God in his heaven. They were the ones invited. And now Jesus is telling the story where the king is going to invite everybody. The good and the bad. It just didn't seem to make sense. But then, of course, nothing that Jesus did made sense anyway. Look at this man. He hangs out with sinners. He eats with them. Everything that Jesus did seemed to be out of kilter with what they believed, what they were. But this invitation was for all, and they should have known that. Because that very chapter talks about he will destroy the shroud that unfolds all peoples and a feast of rich food for all peoples and covers all nations. And he will wipe away the tears from all their faces. So they should have known that it wasn't just for them, but it was for all. I had a friend and he said to me one time, I don't think people like murderers or terrorists should be in heaven. I don't think God should accept them. The things that they've done have just been beyond the pale. It's just too terrible. They shouldn't be in heaven. And you can understand that because people can do really bad things and you think, how could they ever be at that banquet? Is it possible? So is it possible? Is it possible for a murderer to be invited to the banquet and to be welcomed in? Well, yes, it is. If he has repented and turned from his sin and embraced Jesus, then he can come. Can a terrorist who's done terrible atrocities be invited to the banquet and be with God for all time? Is it possible? Well, yes, it is. If he has repented and turned from his ways and embraced Jesus and loved him with all his heart and soul and mind and strength, then he can come. Can a pedophile be invited to the banquet? Well, yes, he can. If he has turned from his ways, repented of his sin, embraced Jesus and loved him with all that he is, then he can come. Because the wonderful thing is, it's not for me to say who can come. It's not for my friend to say who can be invited. It's not for any of us to say who should be there. That's the privilege of the host, the one who sends out the invitations. And all are welcome. If we think we can get into heaven by being good, by being nice, by being generous, by being anything, we're completely mistaken. There is only one way to that banquet. At the end of the passage, there is someone at the party not wearing wedding clothes. Now, what is all that about? Because the king spots him right away. And if I go to that wedding tomorrow and I'm not dressed up in my wedding clothes, you'll be spotted, won't you? And the king spots the person not wearing wedding clothes. He says, friend, how did you get in here? The man was speechless. So did the host say, it's okay, you can stay. How he says, throw him out. He doesn't belong here. He's not properly dressed. Properly dressed? Does it matter how you dress? Well, yes, it does. Because the Bible encourages us to dress a particular way. It says, put on the robe of righteousness that is Christ. It is Christ who is our robe. So whenever we put our faith in Jesus, whatever our backgrounds may be, whenever we put on Christ and God looks at us, he doesn't see us, the sinful Gary or whoever it might be. He sees Jesus. His robe of righteousness that makes me clean, makes me acceptable, makes me worthy of coming to the banquet. But if I think I can wear my clothes of good deeds, or not doing anybody any harm, or being generous, or being nice, or being sacrificial, if I think I can wear those kind of garments, I will never get into that banquet. The only way in is by wearing the robes that Jesus can give us, his robes of righteousness. Because anything else, all our good deeds, the Bible says, is like filthy rags. So why would you not want to go to this party? Why would those Pharisees not want to go to this party? Why would we not want to go to this party? Because it's going to be eternal and it's going to be brilliant and God is going to be there and Jesus is going to be there and it's going to be beyond our imagination. No eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him. Why would you reject that? A number of years ago, well, a few years ago, we had a very special anniversary. And we thought we'd go on a very special holiday, you know the way you do. We thought, well, go to California. California, here I come. It was going to be great. And we wanted our girls to come, and we wanted Thomas to come. And we were going to travel from San Diego and through LA and go to Yosemite and go up to San Francisco. It was going to be immense. And we said to Thomas, we want you to come. He said, oh, I can't be bothered. What do you mean you can't be bothered? This is California, here we come. No, I don't want to go. But you might never get the chance to do that ever again. And you don't even have to pay for it. We're going to Disney. But nothing we said could persuade him to come. It was very sad for us because we wanted to go as a family. But he didn't want to go. His friends thought he was crazy. Why would you not want to go on a holiday like that? Even with your parents. I know it's not very cool. But hey. Yeah. But why would you not want to come? And so it is with this banquet as well. Why would anyone, say I can't be bothered or be hostile? This banquet is going to be amazing. This is a picture of entering into God's kingdom eternally and looking on his face and being like him and drinking from the water of life and eating from the tree of life. It is going to be immense. Why would anyone not say, I am coming? But any time between you say you're coming and you get there, it could fall apart. You could say, yeah, I'm coming. You could come to church and do all the kind of churchy things. And then somewhere down the road, lose focus or lose your faith or lose whatever. You could change your mind. You could become disinterested. But the words used here is a present imperative. It means keep on coming. Come. 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 Keep on coming. So if you've decided that you are coming, that you've responded to that invitation, that you're a Christian, let nothing stop you keeping on going. Because it's going to be immense. It is going to be sensational. Keep on coming. And if you have not responded to that invite, What is there not to like? When I go to that wedding tomorrow, weddings can be long affairs, and we go to the reception, and photographs will be taken, and people will be tired, and people will be grumpy, and people will be saying, oh, I'm starving, when are we going to eat? But at some point, the master of ceremonies will stand up, and he will say, the banquet is ready. Come, your names are on the tables. It is waiting for you. Come, you are invited.